Like
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. No, we did not disappear. We had a month-long hiatus, if you will. I don't know. What do you call it?
Sure. We'll go with that.
All right. Well, yeah, I think the last episode we did was roughly a month ago, post-midterm, sort of making some predictions and reminiscing.
So I think the 8th.
Yeah, was it the 8th? Something like that. Anyway.
Yeah, and it was episode 164, so this is 165. And
all right.
So at least we're allegedly getting back in rhythm here, folks, so...
We've established that. But yes, for anyone that was questioning and wondering if the podcast had slowed down, that really wasn't what happened. I had to move and set up the new studio, and work has been a little nutty, and it was the holidays. So we found some time, and we are back. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, there's obviously been a lot that's gone on in the last month. We've had the massive historic fires in California. We've had Bush Sr. pass away. We've sort of had the developments of... The foundation.
President Trump not making any headlines there.
Not really making too many headlines. We've had sort of the foundation being set for the new freshman class coming to Washington, D.C.
The president to Nancy Pelosi, whether his office can deny them all day long, you know they're talking.
Absolutely. We've also had the G20 summit in Argentina. And it's kind of where we're at now. So we figured between you
they
and I.
They agreed not to raise tariffs. It was celebrated like they made a deal. They made a deal not to progress with the worst elements of the prior deal.
Exactly. To which this really there's happened. Nothing written down. It's more or less a handshake. But, you know, I hope that economically that sort of dispels some fears that the market reacted accordingly. But again, we'll see. We are still in a quote-unquote trade war, just has not escalated. So with that being said, this is a kind of a nod to our old midweek wraps, as we decided we'd touch on a few things moving forward into the new year and into the holidays. Which one should go first? The holidays into the new year. And we might as well just, you know what, before we do this, as always, thanks for tuning into the Mod State Podcast. You can obviously find us on numerous podcast hosting not hosting sites, but just podcast sites. So that's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Podomatic, iTunes, you name it. You can probably find us there. So if you're looking for some good banter over the next month, if you've got some time off, tune on in. So that being said, we appreciate all of your support and for tuning back in. And we do promise we're not slowing down. We have finally taken the longest break, I suppose, between episodes since we started well over a year ago. So,
easily.
Yeah. Felt weird, but it's nice to get back behind the microphone and talk to you. Okay, so let's dive into this.
It's the right thing to do.
It is, absolutely. You know, every now and then, I think it would have been untenable to really put out quality material over the last month in the terms of the move and stuff like that. So I'm happy.
But it was the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was immediately after the election. If we were, because between now and the next election, or through the next election, rather, it's going to be epic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our schedules and this thing growing as it is, it was the perfect time to do so. And it allowed some things to brew and develop, and both externally out in the world and within as well as without.
Indeed. Well, in terms of our precast, we decided that we would sort of highlight a couple things that we found were important. Now, we're sort of post-midterm in this, what you would call maybe a lame duck type session before the new year.
Sure.
And we'll start with the one that I probably find less interesting, and we'll talk about the Supreme Court cases, the second of this group. But the first would be sort of the rumblings that you hear or sort of the things that you continue to hear post-midterm. And I mean, this kind of happens after a lot of elections, that there's certain topics that sort of stick around. And one that I found the most, the narrative, the most interesting, because I really think it touches on a bit of the voter population in terms of what they find important. And I don't necessarily mean politically, but it's a major political issue. But culturally, I think it's something that a lot of people are waking up to, and probably more on the left than on the right. However, I think we came to the conclusion upon talking about this that it isn't something that necessarily hinders the GOP. It actually could work to their benefit, and that is this idea of voter suppression and representation. Now, what you have heard, if you've been following the news at all, and if you kind of dive as deep as John and I do, and this is obviously talking to the listener directly here, is this idea of the idea of this sort of equitable representation and the ability to vote, and that would be termed sort of voter suppression. And I think, you know, I'm not really pointing fingers, and I believe that a lot of the mainstream media or a lot of the places that I glean my news from or the things that I research certainly have a left-leaning slant. So if they have a left-leaning slant, and I'm very open about that. I'm transparent.
Well, sure, but let me add as a caveat here, though, that this is something that everybody can and should get on board with. This is a far cry from the progressive aim of adding more seats to the Supreme Court, or is one of the several ideas, if you will, and I'm being generous with that term, stemming from the progressive camp regarding the Supreme Court. This is something that I can actually get on board with. A lot of moderates, a lot of centrists can get on board with and say, hey, let's take a look at this nationwide.
Absolutely. And that's just the thing. I think what you find, polls aside, right, maybe this is just intuition or like some sort of visceral thought that I'm having that maybe doesn't have a lot of weight to it. However, I think when you look at the midterm elections and you see that there wasn't this massive blue wave we thought there was, even with the real energized group that got out to vote, minus the fractures within the Democratic Party now, whether they be progressive and Democrat.
In fact, you saw every senator that voted against Kavanaugh from the Democratic Party punished.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what you find, and maybe it's a safe assumption to make, is that the...
By punished, I mean they lost.
Exactly. That I think America is far more centrist or moderate, whether that's moderate left or moderate right, because I think...
They're far more purple.
Yeah, they're far... Exactly. Purple is maybe the good word to describe it, if there is something that we can
we're adding a new shade to that definition.
Yeah, so if that being the actuality in the United States, which I think it may be, I think that making access to voting, even though there may be issues that are coming to light nowadays, whether that's retired representative Dingell from Michigan, actually wrote a really interesting article on things that he believes could make America, in terms of representation, more equitable. And there were some very, interesting proposals, one being abolishing the Senate. But I think his overall point was to...
Yeah, let's move on for that one.
To equal the balance of representation and allowing for a greater number of voters and easier access. So the question would be, why does Oregon and Washington have, you know, things like automatic voter registration and write-in, mail-in ballots, essentially, for their entire population, and have very low incidence of voter fraud versus a state that demands voter IDs? So which is actually the best and which actually protects against fraud? So, for example, and I'm not discounting Democratic states where there seem to be issues like California, but North Carolina seems to be in the spotlight today. About an absentee ballot issue in which the GOP front runner had, you know, and we're talking about a margin of like 900 votes, and there was 500 some absentee ballots that were written.
Yeah, they're refusing to certify the election, apparently.
Yeah, because there's a number of absentee ballots with similar signatures. So, again,
Jesus.
I'm not, they're any sort of new type of voting that's not at the booth.
The Republican Party just can't do anything right now.
Well, I mean, I think the real problem is
they have several.
Yeah, there's several, but one being the minor hypocrisy that you see here. This is the same party that pushes the narrative of widespread voter fraud, yet they're really failing to acknowledge this issue in North Carolina.
I bet they are.
Absolutely. The real message that I'm trying to push out here is that I think this is a narrative you continue to see, and it will extend beyond political, and it will be a little bit more cultural, people are starting to recognize certain groups of people who have tougher times voting than maybe someone like myself. And why is that the case? If we all have access to the same resources, sort of like the Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz debate about healthcare, that, you know, Ted Cruz makes the argument that we all have access to healthcare. But Bernie Sanders brings up a good point. He says, okay, if there's a $12 million home, we all have access to that home if it's for sale. But the reality of who can buy it is much different. So we all have access to something, but it's whether or not it's attainable, and or it's something that we can actually have. And that, you know, that's not taking. That's,
I think you can buy insurance a lot easier. It's easier to buy insurance than it is to buy a mansion. I see what point he's trying to make there, but I'm not so crazy about the analogy used to make it.
So I think that my point would be, if anyone can go get an ID, why is it easy for me but harder for someone else if we're both a citizen? So it's,
you know, I just like to point out that it takes more identification to buy a gun than it does to vote.
Well,
but there's a lot more bitching about there needing to be tougher enforcement of gun laws. So I just find that very interesting. And yes, those are two separate issues, but I still.
Well, at the end of the day, the one thing that separates
you're not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
No, the one thing that separates buying a weapon from being able to vote is just the background check that goes with it. And in some cases, you know, you don't need a birth certificate to buy a weapon. But you need an ID. But I guess you need a birth certificate to get an ID.
As long as you've been born again,
you can get one, mine. So anyway. Yeah. I do have to say, and I'll post the representative, I think it's Congressman, not Senator Dingell. I think it's Senator.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I just know the Dingell.
I'm going to put that.
The Dingell.
I'll put his article that he wrote in the show notes. But the one thing that he did bring up that is interesting in terms of the Electoral College in the Senate is...
Yeah, let's forget him abolishing the Senate. That's an outrageous idea. Yeah. We're not going to amend the Constitution for that.
It's just a food for thought kind of thing. So in terms of when that was enacted, right, a long time ago, he makes the point that Rhode Island and we'll just say Delaware, it was whatever state he was comparing it to, they both got two senators. It just because at the time it was more... it was more prevalent that other states would quote unquote bully another state. And so that equal representation allowed to forego that or mitigate that.
But so what's the problem?
So the problem is today is as our population grows and as our population moves to places, maybe it's coastal cities, maybe the mass, the total.
He has a problem with Idaho having the same representation in the Senate as California.
Well, it's along those lines. So let's say that 70% of our population amasses itself in a certain section of the United States. That leaves let's just say the West through the Midwest has, we'll say, each one of those states has 5% of the population, but they all get equal representation in the Senate. Now, I don't think his problem is that is the
reason
case.
For that.
His problem is that it creates a hyper-partisanship where if there truly are bills put into place to equally represent or represent 70% of the population, but it's stifled by 5% of the population for what they need, it's sort of a utilitarian question to ask, is that truly the way it should be set up? I don't know. It's just food for thought.
I'm not willing to visit the Constitution over the issue. I mean, I see what he's driving at.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of other boxes that it checks.
Sure.
That, I mean, without getting into the weeds and parliamentary procedure.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I'm not.
News.
I'm certainly not making the case that we should amend the Constitution for that. And he's not.
I think there's other areas of his article that I'm more. I gave it a brief scan at the outset here, and there's a lot to it that I think is interesting beyond us.
Yeah, and his move to abolish the Senate essentially meant to combine the House and the Senate together. So you're not really getting rid of the entire institution or getting rid of those representatives.
Still not going to get rid of any sort of oligarchy that he's calling out here. So, fundamentally, at the end of the day, I'm not really sure what it accomplishes, but it's an interesting idea to spark conversation, if nothing else, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so moving on from there, you had brought up a case that's going before the Supreme Court. And one thing that we've harped on continually here at the Mod State podcast and Mod State .com, really the entire enterprise, has been this idea of civil rights. And one thing that we haven't talked too much about that's going before the Supreme Court now is the idea of asset forfeiture. And for those of you who don't know what this is, I'm sure you've heard of it in some form, is essentially a case where, and this is just an example, it's a hypothetical, although it's probably realistic in some cases, where someone gets stopped, let's say with $5,000 cash. Let's pretend they're driving across state to buy a new car for cash, or they're going to Vegas and they got a pile of cash in the car. It really doesn't take much for law enforcement to just come up with some sort of story or some sort of suspicion, probable cause, that cash isn't going to be used for that said purpose that individual
had. We think officer, I know what drugs look like, and these look like drugs. You know, it doesn't take long for their mind to wander towards the nefarious.
Exactly.
And so,
now I'm sure a bit of biased and skin color might play a role into that. If I get stopped with $5,000 in cash and I say I'm going to buy a vehicle,
it's probably
going to
be a little different if you and I got stopped together.
Exactly.
And
so another case I think that you'd said, and I'll let you speak more to it, but it's a real story of an individual being stopped with a bag of weed, essentially. And
right.
They wound
it was $100 or less, the amount of weed, lost his $40,000 Land Rover
to asset forfeiture.
And that's where they say, all right, well, right. This Land Rover had this much marijuana on him. It's involved in trafficking, cross state lines, blah, 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 blah. The Commerce Clause at the end of the day is invoked. And he lost his Land Rover. Well, this guy's fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. It was interesting that Justice Gorsuch and Sotomayor, the two of them, went up on the same side of this oral argument, questioning if some sort of undersecretary of, I don't know, sanitation at the FBI, I don't know who it was, in all seriousness, beyond somebody high ranking at the FBI.
Some senior guy.
Right. And they were like, all right, so what is it that you do here? Now, in all seriousness, Justice Neil Gorsuch specifically engaged him, saying, okay, so you're all right with this. Is there any level of asset forfeiture that you're not comfortable with as pertains to the Fourth, Fifth, and Eighth Amendment? You know, basically he addressed that in different segments. He addressed the issue of unreasonable search and seizure, of cruel and unusual punishment, of excessive fines, and without missing a beat, the cop, the FBI guy goes, no, not really. I mean, because there's been cases that have been brought up, such as a guy that had a relatively, it was like a quarter of a pound, I believe, might have been less, of marijuana in Pittsburgh. His parents, somewhere around about Pittsburgh, I believe, his parents lost a $550,000 home over the issue. Mm-hmm. Well, only in five states is this illegal. Well, this guy's fought this all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, Gorsuch's question, again, suggests that there's a possibility that the power lie in the streets here, especially when paired with the, I think, I have an optimistic appraisal, I suppose you could say, of the Jared Kushner-backed legislation that is ready to be introduced in the Senate. For whatever reason, it's Senator McConnell has held on to it, but I think there's some very
well. Let's
put it this way: there's some rays of sunshine here in terms of civil rights that, regardless of who's in power.
Let's put a couple more things. Let's make this even a little bit more relevant, and not relevant, but some other items around the idea of forfeiture that, and in this case in general, that make it interesting. So this individual, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but in most cases in asset forfeiture, if I'm saying that, even saying that correctly, is that you don't actually have to be charged with a crime to have any sort of asset that you have seized. So that cash can be taken.
Well, you don't have to be convicted.
You don't have to be convicted. You don't have to be charged. Or you can be charged and then the charge is dropped, but you still have to fight for those assets back. In the case of...
In this case, the guy's already paid his fines, blah, blah, blah.
So it's not...
And he's just wanted his car back.
Exactly. So in this case, let's say it's a dime bag of weed. So he has... doesn't matter. But let's just, for the sake of reasonable recreational consumption. And that's a lot different than that's a lot different to a lot of people. But
I was going to say, that's enough to get you and I pissed off.
But reasonable. That you're charged with whatever misdemeanor or like in Colorado, if you have a bag of weed coming from a dispensary, that's completely legal. If it's open, it's obviously essentially
you're not allowed to consume it in public. I don't think in any of these states, are you?
No, it's essentially kind of like a DUI, right? That same level of repercussion.
I wanted to ask that question though. Is it certain bars, there's sidewalk, there's patio areas where you can go outside with alcohol in every state. Is it not like that with marijuana? I mean, you get in trouble for smoking on somebody's balcony?
Honestly, if it's in public, and I think the differentiation between alcohol and weed is that especially when you're smoking it, it extends from the boundaries of where you're at. So it's almost as if it can be a public nuisance. Whereas alcohol, unless you're throwing it over the fence at somebody, kind of stays within the confines.
Unless you're in Philadelphia.
Exactly. Or, I don't know, anywhere else where you're celebrating or you're just piss-ass.
Mardi Gras.
Exactly. But then again, in Mardi Gras, most cops aren't stopping people for smoking a joint during the processions. So it is unfortunate that it's just case-by-case basis. So the one thing that makes this interesting is that it's sort of in a sense that you don't have to be charged, or you can be charged, and you still have all these assets that you have to forfeit.
Just for good measure.
And the other thing that's interesting about this for our international listeners is the two Supreme Court justices that aligned on this issue are actually probably the two people that one doesn't think would align themselves together. So,
So Mayor being an Obama appointee, exactly. Neil Gorsuch being President Trump's. Sonia Sotomayor was President Obama's appointee. President Trump appointed Neil Gorsuch. So you wouldn't see the two of those legal minds sitting down huddling.
No,
you know?
We certainly see a more liberal mind, and you certainly see a more conservative mind. So them coming together on this is actually, when I read it, was actually a sort of ray of hope.
That's what I mean. And the fact that President Trump, you know that he has called Representative Pelosi. I don't care what the office says. They denied it. You know they have.
Yeah. No.
She's about to be Speaker of the House.
Exactly. Speaker of the House. So which kind of...
And I think she'll advance the legislation on criminal justice reform. I think they need to... He's already said publicly a number of times he's behind the legislation. Well, they need to, I guess, ratchet up the pressure on Senator McConnell. Mm-hmm. Get the ball rolling here.
I think at the end of the day, this all sort of ties in to the overall narrative moving forward and the progression in our country. And in terms of things like voter suppression, representation, I think what you find is in a truly hyper-information age, if you will, there's just so much...
I got the post-information blues, my friend.
We're really at the point where... we're not just getting our information from one newspaper. And so I think the public overall, right and left, or if you don't even align politically,
from anywhere.
Yeah, you literally are watching these things unfold, and you can kind of call stupid is, I'm butchering that. But the point being, there are far more people waking up to ridiculous things that are going on in the United States. And
yeah, it's cool to know nothing.
Yeah, it was. So now it's not even that it's cool to know nothing. It's almost impossible to know nothing.
To know anything.
We're all a little bit of jack of all trades based on the information that we receive all the time. So anyway, it will be interesting to see if that legislation gets pushed forward. I think culturally the United States is looking for something like this. And if it's even if it's passed bipartisan or it's passed in the Senate, that's a huge win for GOP. And even those individuals who are centrist and moderate that would like to see some movement on something that we all just think is sort of ridiculous right now. And that
President Trump has said behind closed doors on a number of occasions that he would like to see marijuana descheduled or at least removed from Schedule One.
Well, we are so close.
Maybe there's a real across the board.
Well, I think
I think we're there, and I think he's the president to do it because he's not gonna care, and if nothing else, he'll claim it as a win.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like industrial scale hemp is moving its way towards legalization in the United States.
The whole thing is gonna be legal within a decade, so not President Trump?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a win for. I really don't care who it is. I say just do it from a sort of a civil rights. And in this case, the agriculture. I mean, you got to think Mitch McConnell is just ready to cash in and get paid in Kentucky, which will be the heart of the hemp industry when he gets
out. Look at where John Boehner is. Look at him. 100%. The fact that he's on the board of a cannabis business. All right. President Trump, as I said, regarding the immigration issue, could take this and wrangle it to his own advantage within the microscope of being a fiscal detectable by the barometer of being a fiscal conservative. He could say, hey, look, like with immigration, we're going to have less costs. We're going to have people automatically enrolled in the Social Security system, which means they're going to be taxed right away, A through Z. He's playing there with this. You know, there's a number of obvious fiscal advantages he can argue here. There's going to be less incarceration costs. There's going to be tax revenue. We're going to regulate and tax this like alcohol. There's going to be jobs.
Well,
it's wins across the board here for the president. It's so obvious. I don't know why anyone on his staff is not pushing this.
Beyond that,
that's a reason to motivate him.
Oh, 100%. I think in terms of a competition, right? Because I think this guy is at a rudimentary level is rooted in competition.
Give him something to compete for here.
I think geopolitically, regardless of the sort of domestic consequences of legalization, really the narrative that's being pushed as America first, it doesn't take our need to be a leader in the world away. And what you're finding is that Mexico is probably going to legalize recreational marijuana. Canada already has. And so already in North America, we're lagging behind. And I think if you use that in sort of a competition type sense with the president and just say, look, we're lagging behind in this, you know, talk about tourism, civil rights, et cetera, that this is a real, and research, and just having the greatest research, one of the greatest research spots on planet Earth, the United States of America, to open that up for research, for pharma research, for academic research. I mean, it's just a win-win across the board. So I don't know, somehow we got moved to pot, but,
It's okay. I mean, because across the board, we've got these wins, these boxes we can check. And I think it's important that we see that at the Supreme Court. We see it congressional elections on the local level. We see it with the president and the legislation waiting in the wings to be introduced in the Senate. There's a lot of positives all around it. It's important that we stress that as well amidst sometimes what can be some darker subject matter.
Well, and the other thing too is this is a perfect example of how there are certain things and just in general, cultural momentum happens faster and happens way before any political momentum picks up. And democracy is slow. And democracy is slow for a reason. And so I think your assessment of 10 years is probably spot on.
We want to get this right.
Absolutely. 100%.
Uruguay is the only country in the defense of the opposition. Uruguay is the only country in the Western Hemisphere outside of North America to have legalized it.
That's very true.
So we're not too terribly far behind.
No, I don't think so.
And also, its status is questionable in Western Europe as well. So we've still got the opportunity to be at the fore here. And everybody forgets about Greenland. They're administrated, I believe, is a part of Denmark, but it's still technically part of North America.
Well, maybe they've got some super winter pot that we're unaware of.
I should go to Greenland and take over the men's national team.
Hey, there you go.
And see if I can hustle our way into the World Cup.
Well, I'll be your one staunch supporter, my friend.
Yeah, you can make sure and share everything on social media, all six highlights on the way to not qualifying.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, before we certainly not saying we're wrapping up. However, I did want to touch on this and just get ahead of it, and that is the potential wrap up or climax, if you will, of the Mueller investigation. And what we do know, and I'm not really here to speculate too much, I think.
But we are.
But we are, I guess, because that's the only thing we can do. And that is, it sounds like Michael Flynn will now, or the special prosecutor has requested no, or not requested is the right word, but has proposed or asked for no jail time for Michael Flynn because of his substantial assistance to the special prosecutor, sitting for like 19 plus interviews, not affidavit, but the documents presented to the court. There was quite a few redactions, which means there's some ongoing investigations that we are unaware of now.
Bodes ominous.
It does bode ominous, that's for sure. But I think you had made the point, and I agree with you, that there are some aspects of this case that seem to be a bit out of the scope of the special prosecutor, and that is as evidence of deferring some of the case, especially that of Manafort, to New York. Exactly. Thank you. But what I think we're finding is Mueller specifically has he is circling back home. And he is starting to present evidence that is clearly within the scope of his.
Yeah, and the midterms are over. At what point are you going to say if you got something or not?
Well,
homeboy,
I think, and this is sort of my gut feeling the entire time, is that we just didn't know exactly what was going on. I think there are some things they unearthed through whether what they unearthed was within their scope. They obviously deferred it to New York. And they did what they did with it in terms of Manafort. But I think when you go down a road of detective work and of unearthing the happenings of certain individuals, there probably are going to be things that you find that are not within your scope. But
let
it's
me
still
ask you
breaking
a question.
The law.
This is going to be a big, big, big question that might see the whole thing land before the Supreme Court. I'm not so sure. But do you think that the president's Twitter account should be viewed as supporters and staff argue within his First Amendment purview, or is it more an extension of his office, thereby obstruction of justice?
I mean, isn't his Twitter handle something along the lines of the Donald Trump?
Well, one of them is real Donald Trump. One of them is POTUS45.
That's a good question.
But that's a question that's been.
So
well,
I guess
Mueller's
I guess
answered it in terms of his own investigation is concerned. They've answered it. I think you could say in the affirmative that it's the latter, that it's more along the lines of obstruction of justice. That's the only reason I can speculate that the tweets keep coming up, is not because if it was the former, if it was something they viewed as well within his First Amendment rights, we wouldn't keep hearing about it. Because that means that they would have dropped it. In this case, I believe the fact that it keeps coming up, that by logical extension, maybe I'm completely off base, but I have deduced that.
Well, okay, so it's
clearly they're viewing it as a violation, as obstruction of justice.
Okay, so then my question is, what's the differentiation between the two? So, like, if he has one Twitter account, anything he says goes, and it's fine, it's untouchable. But if he uses a different one, anything he says could be used as obstruction of justice. So
that's what I mean. This is kind of a dangerous, potentially dangerous, slippery slope here.
So why would one of his Twitter accounts have different protections than the multiple Twitter accounts that I have? That's my question.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. Can your average person, can their social media accounts be? I know they can be investigated, obviously, but can you obstruct justice by what you tweet?
Why not?
Well, but in what way can you physically impede an investigation by tweeting?
Okay, witness tampering. So let's say.
So I mean, what time frame as well? Because that matters.
So in this case, you've seen the Roger Stone issue, right? And that has to do with. And this is probably where
this guy's got Richard Nixon's face tattooed on his back, for God's sake.
Good Lord, so.
He's wild.
Roger Stone had said something along the lines that I will never testify against Trump, and Trump had a response tweet.
He just invoked the Fifth.
He did just invoke the Fifth. But there,
I don't blame him.
So, okay, so in this situation, let's say that I commit a crime, and I'm being investigated for it, or maybe I didn't commit a crime. But anyway, I'm being investigated, and let's say that you are privy to what's going on, and maybe you're going to be called as a witness against me. Now, if I shoot something out on the Mod State Twitter or whatever Twitter handle I have, and I say something, who knows? I say something that's maybe threatening to you or perceived as threatening, or that could be or just anything related to the case.
So do you see a hard line or a soft line between your First Amendment rights? Because to me, that's what's in danger of being sacrificed here.
Sure. But I think
doesn't the president also have First Amendment rights?
Absolutely. But is Twitter or something that I write down any different from the words that I use to potentially obstruct justice? So if I say, let's just say I say something sort of ambiguous to you, and
you're on trial for libel.
Okay, and let's
as a journalist.
Okay. Or
as associate editor of Mod State, you're on trial for libel. Use that.
Okay. Okay, and so I say something to you. You're a witness. Let's just say let's just use this as a hypothetical, because it really doesn't matter what I say. Let's say I tweet, I know where your mom lives. That could be implied. I could say, well, I just told him I know where his mom lives. Or could that be ominous or a threat? Now, what's the difference between me tweeting that and me saying it, I know where your mom lives, or write it? Any one of those are a platform, an extension of the words that I say.
Now, by nature of the tweet, and this is where people like Rudy Giuliani are going to come in with the First Amendment howling, is you could always say, and that's why, how many times have you heard me say, I don't like doing serious communication, be it business or personal, via text, via email, because you can't tell tone, inflection.
Absolutely.
Well, you could always argue, if you're Rudy Giuliani, look, the president was up at 2 o'clock in the morning taking a dump, all right, he was taking a slam, decided to tweet, it was being funny.
Yeah, and this,
you could run all day with this as a defense attorney.
Absolutely, but I think at the bottom line, I don't know where you differentiate between something that I say, something that I write, or something that I tweet. It's still me doing it.
It's more interpreting. It's more open to interpretation, though, in my personal opinion. 100%. I'm not a lawyer, but via tweet. That is far more open to interpretation, because you could always argue your inflection was different than what people hear.
And that's fine. I think you should have the ability to argue the context of the tweet, but there should never be special protections for one platform to another, whether the medium is through my mouth or whether the medium is through Twitter.
But I think it is different to say that a tweet is the same as having an audio recording of a phone call. No, it's not. It's not the same thing.
Well, it's, and the only reason it's not the same is because
you can't tell the inflection. Yeah, you can't tell the tone, the intonation, the intention.
So I guess I would just say, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. But what I would say is that emails are still the same medium. It's still digital. It's still ones and zeros at the end of the day.
Right, people, and I wasn't howling, yeah. You know, for those thinking of the President Trump's ravings about Hillary's emails before. That's nowhere near where I was going with that, but...
Well, I just think the point is the medium's the same, and people have gone down for far less in just email communication.
Of course.
I really... It's very interesting because...
He's in gray territory here, but I will say, I mean, what do you agree with my positing that the fact that it keeps coming up means that Mueller is leaning towards it being obstruction of justice?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think...
Because, again, logically, I argue that if it was he was siding more toward leaning towards First Amendment exercise, we wouldn't keep hearing about it, right?
You know, I think it's such a weird, uncharted territory because it's not an email.
Towards obstruction.
I would agree. Because it's not really emails, right? Because emails are something you need to get a warrant for. Those are almost like confidential communications.
This is public.
This is super public. This is archived. This will be archived.
Yeah, people have sold books. There's somebody with a best-selling book that's archived like the first 4 years of his like candidacy and presidential tweets.
Yeah,
I mean, you can imagine.
Literally, the tweets will be archived, whether it's in his presidential library or at the Library of Congress. So it is all public record. And you got to be thinking, the Mueller team is like, dude, just keep tweeting away, man, because you're digging your own grave. I mean, at the end of the day, if he's guilty of something.
It's going to be obstruction, if anything.
Yeah.
Because if they had him, I'm telling you, just like with the dossier from Russia, in this day and age, I'm not an IT expert, okay, but I know enough to be dangerous. Everything on my stage just about is proprietary and it's guts, all right? I know enough to know. If there was something in that dossier from Russia, for example, if there was something now concrete, some sort of smoking gun, it would have been open and shut. The case would have been closed. We would know whatever from the Russia dossier. We would already be talking about Mueller's conclusions today.
I think so.
All right. So the reality is that there's going to be a lot of points made, but at the end of the day, my personal opinion is he's going to try and hang his hat on obstruction. And the argument's going to be over, first of all, whether a sitting president can be indicted. Mm-hmm. Second, whether it merits high crimes and misdemeanors. That's for the House to answer.
Mm-hmm. Which, this kind of leads us into we won't go into this too much, but more of a teaser that we can talk about at a later podcast episode, is the new Speaker of the House.
Hardly know her.
Yeah. Who would have thought? Nancy Pelosi. And really...
Who would have thought that I would be relieved, of all people?
Hey, look, at the end of the day, this would be the person that would have to handle that sort of issue. She's
bound to do a better job than Paul Ryan.
The bar's kind of low there, buddy.
Well.
You're right. Yeah.
She's been at the bar, so we'll see how low.
Oh, God. So, in the teaser for the upcoming episode, and I don't know how much time we'll spend on Nancy Pelosi, but look, I think that her appointment or nomination, rather, is a good. She'll be a good leader again for the current time, because really,
she's not a leader of the future. She's a safe pick. She's somebody to 100%. Guide them through, God forbid, impeachment proceedings. But she's rightfully argued that the scope needs to be very narrow. That high crimes and misdemeanors are not equated with someone that we dislike. She made that point early on, and I think it's a rational one. It's not a future-savvy pick, but again, they've got to keep their eye on the prize, which is 2 years from now. There's going to be more House elections along with the presidential election. So there's a big picture, a macro mentality the Democrats have to adapt here, and quickly.
Yes.
This is no time to relent. They've got to stamp that, you know, Louisiana's Senate election's coming up next year. But they're going to be thinking big picture here. There's some real opportunities here for the Democrats. And part of that, I think the American people, you made the point, I translated it as more purple, but I think the American people don't see this as some lame duck 2 years. I think the American people want to see some things get done, like a budget, resolving the questions at the border, one way or the other.
There's
a lot of questions right now that I think the American people, they may not like the answers they get, but they want to see the question answered.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
I mean, Congress's first power, as prescribed by the United States Constitution, is the power of the purse in passing a budget. Not a damn CR, a continuing resolution that, hey, the same bullshit we did the year before, we're going to do it this year or the next 2 years. No, let get something done, for God's sake.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. So we'll leave
That's the American people. That's not, I don't think that's me. I think that's the gross sentiment that I'm filtering down into the net here.
Yeah. I agree with you. 100%.
The long and short is, sure, it's a mixed government. Y'all speak English.
Yeah. And you know what?
They do a job.
You'd be surprised what gets done with a mixed or a split Senate and House. But you know,
and you've got the great equalizer. I mean, the great is X Factor 1 week, equalizer the next. The Donald. I mean, come on, you got 2 more years at the very least. I'm gonna go ahead and call it 6 more years of the Donald.
Oh God.
All right, Joe Biden's I don't know if the Democrats have sense enough to nominate him, but even if they do, still, it's like this guy, he's already raised $250 million. Campaigns haven't even been officially announced yet. Nobody's in the race, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I may stand corrected 2 years from now, but I ask again, who's going to beat him?
Well, in 2 years, we'll have plenty to talk about.
We'll see. Yeah, yeah. I mean, over this time, we'll have been in the gallery for the White House press secretary by that point. So lots going to have unfolded here. That's a little teaser of ours for the. There's more to come. Lots more to come.
Indeed. Well, unfortunately, the sad part is I have to work tomorrow.
Fresh out of time.
And I need to let you go. But as always, my friend, it's an absolute pleasure as always. So until next time.
Good to be back.
Yep. So we'll see you.
Au revoir.